we've had a, I don't know, would you say a lot of issues?
This week we had a rash of shootings, yeah.
A rash of shootings, mm-hmm. So a lot of gun violence.
Hello, Tom Gresham.
Tom Gresham on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. That's his favorite phrase. A lot of gun violence.
That must be my cue to show up.
Oh, you sound like you're in a tunnel. What are you doing? Are you out in the mountains?
Oh, I am out in the mountains. Absolutely. Let's see if we can fix that a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. We can fix that a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe that's more
Thank
better.
You. There you. There you go.
The reason I called you yesterday is because we've had some local leaders talking about we have to find an answer for the gun violence. And I saw something online. It was a little boy who was in a classroom getting ready for school to start. And he told his mom was kind of being critical of him, his work at school. And he looked at his mom and he said, "Mom, I didn't fail the test. The pencil did." And I thought, wow, what a great analogy. I didn't shoot that person. The gun did.
Well, I mean, and you guys know the whole deal about the term gun violence is a way of saying, okay, we don't really care about crime. We don't really care about violence. We really want to control people, and we will call it gun violence as a way to get at gun control, which is all about what? Control, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there is not a single gun control law in the U.S., and we've tried everything up to it, including bans in particular areas. Not a single one that's ever been shown to reduce crime. Even the CDC studied this, and they said they couldn't find any instance of gun control laws reducing crime. Why do we keep doing this?
Well, isn't it, and quite frankly, the reverse effect in a lot of cases? Because your law-abiding citizens aren't armed, your criminals are, and gun violence actually goes up.
Well, yeah, look at what happened over the last few days. We had a fellow who's doing a mass attack in Traverse City, Michigan with a knife, and a citizen with a gun and a carry permit stops him. Didn't have to shoot him, just pointed his gun at him. And typically people stop doing what they're doing when you point the gun at them. And versus what happened in New York City, where no one has a gun to use for self-defense. No one's allowed to defend themselves. And everyone is required by law to be defenseless, and no one can stop this guy.
Mm. Who's walking in the sidewalk carrying an AR-style rifle.
Right.
And walks right into the building. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to figure out who he is and what he's doing. This is not a hard problem to solve. You know, we know what's going on. We know who he is. And all you need is one good person who has a gun and knows how to use it to, as we say, return him to ambient temperature.
With the political climate that we're in now, Tom, I have to ask you, I know you're not as worried about gun laws now, but are some of the strict gun laws in places like California and others, are they now starting to be reversed because the political climate is changing, or is that not happening yet?
It's always a battle, Aaron. We're making some headway on the federal level, and in the courts we're making some headway, but then again we have some courts that seem to ignore the Supreme Court and actually ignore the Second Amendment. I mean, for those who want a quick remedial lesson, the Second Amendment says the right of the people, not the government, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't grant anyone a right. All the Second Amendment does is says, look, government, keep your hands off of it. The people have this right, and you need to leave them alone.
Mm. Are you anticipating things getting a little bit easier in the gun industry and things being better in the next few years?
Well, I think yes, and we're seeing across the country now. Well, North Carolina is just about to pass what we call constitutional carry, where you do not have to have a permit. You don't have to ask the government permission to exercise a constitutional right. That'll be 30 states now where you don't need a permit to carry a gun. Now, and look, here's the deal. If you are prohibited by law from owning a gun, you still can't carry a gun. It doesn't mean that criminals can carry guns. They're still prohibited. Oh, yeah, and by the way, criminals still break the law because that's kind of the definition of criminals, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Do you applaud the efforts? Because there's been a real serious effort here in our community to get guns out of the hands of criminals. and they're making a real, real concerted effort. Does that have an impact on crime? If we finally get the guns away from these criminals, does that impact crime? Do the stats show that?
It's a worthless effort. No one's ever, ever gotten guns out of the hands of criminals. Because criminals don't care what you do. They don't care what law you pass. They don't care what you do to them. They are going to have guns. It is the silliest political theater. And it's politicians saying, oh, look at me. I did something for you. No, they didn't. They're just pretending to do something so they can con people into voting for them. There is no way. I'm sorry. There's no way to get the guns out of the hands of criminals. The only thing you can do is punish them and put the criminals away. Now, that works. Put them away. Put them in places where they can't come hurt us. And the other thing you can do is allow and get out of the way and quit prohibiting people from being able to protect themselves. And, you know, Aaron, one of the things that's great about this is the trend that we're really seeing across the country is more and more women have figured it out and said, you know, I'm not going to try to depend upon anybody else to protect me. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to take care of my kids. And I know that the cops, as good as they are, they're not going to be there whenever this thing is that's going to go down when it happens. And so I'm going to protect myself.
Well, and the police are reactionary. They're not preventative.
Oh, exactly right. You know, there's a cop did a study. He came up with a term. He called it the stopwatch of death. And it's real simple. He says the more time that goes on, the more people die. And he was particularly talking about mass shootings and, you know, these types of attacks like schools and churches and that type of thing. Just if you have to call somebody on the telephone and say, would you please bring a gun over here in the interim before they get dying versus having someone on location who can shoot the bad guy. And look, make no mistake, that's what we're talking about here. We got to shoot the bad guy because once you do that, they stop shooting other people. It really is a pretty simple calculus.
Yeah, and if they know there's a gun in that home, they're probably going to another home.
Possibly, but once again, and here's the other part. Getting a gun is not enough.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand. It's not a magic talisman that all of a sudden makes you okay, it makes you good. You're not good. Just because you're an American, and especially just because you're a guy, you were not born with innate abilities to shoot a gun and know what to do.
That's true.
You watched all the John Wick movies that does you. You actually have to go take a class.
Yeah.
And people say, well, I practice all the time. Practice is not training. I keep saying this over and over on Gun Talk. Practice is not training.
Very good.
You got to go take a class. You got to get instruction.
My daughter, when she lived in Dallas, had to call the police because somebody broke into her backyard and tried to get in the house. And when they were walking around, the police, she's been trained, by the way, and she carries. And the policeman looked at her, and she had her Glock. And he looked at her, and he goes, let's see, two large dogs. You've got a Glock. You look like you know what you're doing with. He goes, your dad did a good job.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Dad.
I know. Made me feel good.
Well,
you know, it is up to women to take care of themselves. And, you know, the thing is, women are pretty smart, and they can figure that out.
You bet. Tom Gresham, we appreciate you, and let's hope those pencils don't fail tests when kids go back to school next week.
Absolutely. You guys be safe.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, this is a dumb question. Did it storm yesterday afternoon?
It did. We had a pretty big storm come through. It was a fast-moving one, though.
Okay. I was in my studio, which is pretty quiet, when the door is closed. And when I was on my way home, I don't know, 5:30, I was like, my gosh, limbs are blown down in the street.
Yeah. There was a report that wind speeds...
This is over by Querby's Golf Course.
Wind speeds downtown were upwards of 57 miles an hour.
How did I miss this? Because we didn't get a lot of rain where I was.
I didn't get a lot of rain, but the wind was blowing the trees. And, you know, when that happened, and my power went out at about 5:22, not that I was noticing a time or anything, but in the afternoon.
Yep, mine went out.
Mm-hmm.
I got a notice.
I didn't get a SWEPCO notice. I got an email from them.
I didn't get a text. SWEPCO notice. I have that Ting service that USAA said, we'll provide this, you know, and it monitors your electricity.
Right.
And it's supposed to monitor your voltage through your house and things. So when the power went out, it sent me a text. I thought that, but I did not hear from SWEPCO.
Okay. I did get an email.
It came back
SWEPCO.
On pretty quickly, though.
Mine was 522, like I said, when it went out. And it was 10, 15 minutes, and I'm still waiting. And I normally never lose power because my lines are underground. So I thought, oh, this is something more serious. And so I start calling everyone. As you know, that's kind of what I do. And I started looking for a hotel.
Did you call Dr. Fleming?
No, I didn't need a sandwich. But I because my problem was the restoration time said 9 p.m.
Right.
And I thought, 4 hours? Me? 4 hours? Come on now.
The queen does not go
that's
that long.
That's not happening. And I texted some friends at the Y to see, is the Y out? And they said, yeah, power's all out in the whole area. So I thought, this could be longer than anticipated. So I started looking for a hotel. I was going to book a hotel. I was about to book the live casino. They had a good deal. And then the juice came back on. So I was only about an hour.
Well, at 5:20 when ours went out, it didn't stay off that long. And so by the time I got home, it was back on. I reset the clocks, and I was in the actually reading. I was in the living room, and it goes off again, or 6:30 or so.
Okay.
And I was like, oh no! But then it came back on pretty quickly. So I wasn't really out. I did have to go back and reset the clocks, but I wasn't out any length of time. But I never got notification, and I usually do from SWEPCO.
I have to ask y'all a question. Ruben, you might can help too. You've had dogs and all that, and Mike, you're a dog lover. I really had something weird happen with the dog last night when the power went out. He normally, if I'm in my bedroom and I'm reading or watching TV in there or doing something piddling in the bedroom, I typically shut the door. He doesn't come in. I don't let him in there because sometimes he's dirty and he'll want to get right on the bed. And I'm like, no.
Okay.
So door shut. I'm in there tinkering. I was actually on my computer. And if he really has to go out, he'll come to my door and he'll start whining, you know, like, oh, I got to go tinkle.
Right.
And so he comes to my door and he starts whining. And again, the power's out, but my laptop's got a power thing on it. So I was still able to use it. And so I go to the door and I'm like, okay, let's go outside and let's go TT and all that. And we go to the door.
Is that called a battery?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I
don't know, one of them backup things. Yeah. And we go, and he didn't want to go out. Why is he at the door whining? Does the power outage impact the dog somehow that I don't know?
They can, I think they're sensitive to like barometric pressure and things like that.
Yeah.
He's sensitive to thunder. He can probably hear things we can't hear.
Yeah, he was more worried about the weather than the power.
Yeah.
Was he? So but I wasn't hearing much thunder. Now, I was hearing the winds and all that. So he was hearing it to a greater extent.
Yeah, he was hearing the winds and the sticks hitting your house.
Okay. Because I was like, what's going on with him? Is something, like, is he one of those dogs that doesn't want to be in the dark either? Is he whiny like mom? Because, you know, when the power goes out, what does a mom do? Whine. And so he's coming to my room. He's whining. He learned that from mom, I guess, but it was kind of freaky.
He's more sensitive, like Ruben said. He's more sensitive to the weather.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Interesting.
They can hear things we can't hear.
Yeah.
My dog will be on the couch and they start growling. I'm like, what?
That's always, it's unnerving.
Yeah. What?
What's going on with you? Exactly.
Starts looking at the window.
And he wouldn't go out. He just wouldn't go. He looked at me like, no, I just want to hang out with you. So we had to hang out for a little while.
Right.
He was just nervous. So we hung out and we snuggled. And then shortly after that, the power came back on. And that thing on my computer, I didn't need it anymore because I had electricity.
That power thing.
Yeah.
Louisiana Commissioner of Insurance Tim Temple joining us after the news, top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I told you before the power went out, I was reading. It was on a Kindle, so I didn't need light.
Okay.
So it worked out fine.
Yeah.
But I'm reading a James Patterson book.
Okay.
I'd never read any James Patterson before.
Oh, wow.
This is the second one. My sister said something about him a few months ago. And then I started looking at him. My gosh, what a prolific writer.
There's a ton.
This guy's got to be a billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, seriously.
Oh.
He's got to be worth $1 billion.
Definitely.
And so, but I'm reading the second in the Alex Cross series.
Okay.
Have you read any? I know you read.
I haven't read. I don't remember which one of his series I started reading, but I didn't get through it. So I'm still, I have them. I have a bunch of them, but I haven't gotten to them yet.
It kind of reminds me of like Luther. If you ever watched Luther, which is the British crime drama, Idris Elba is an inspector in the London police, you know. And I can see Idris Elba being Alex Cross
very easily. Haven't they made an Alex Cross movie?
Yes, they did. And Morgan Freeman was one that they did several years ago. But anyway, the books are very good, very well written. They're good, but my gosh, they're dark.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
And I have to. Sometimes I just have to go. I got to go to Mayberry.
Yeah.
I got to put it down.
I get it.
I got to go get something, read something else lighter just for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm on the second and. So I'm a new James Patterson fan.
I'll have to share you some of mine that some I have read. It's been years, and some I haven't. So
obviously, he's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm, he has. He's been around a long time.
I'm always late to the party.
Everybody loves him big time.
I didn't see Sopranos for the first time until after it had been off the air for probably 15 years.
Right.
And then I got hooked. Breaking Bad was the same way.
Oh, me too for Breaking Bad.
I never watched it. And they kept talking about it when I had my own studio and I worked with the guys, and they would come, oh, did you see Breaking Bad last night?
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've gone through it three times.
Exactly.
So,
anyway,
I bring that up because it was interesting to me how, you can get into it, but boy, they're dark.
Definitely. By the way, if you have a question for our insurance commissioner, your insurance rate's too high. You're still waiting to see some help? He's going to be joining us just after 7 o'clock. Send us your questions on the Shreveport Security Systems message board. We might ask him one of your questions. Get them to us now, though.
Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Okay, yesterday we were talking about AI-proof jobs. Okay. And you can read about that on keelnews.com. But I started looking, I kind of did some research. Fortune magazine had a story on jobs. There's like 40 jobs that will be either replaced or affected by AI.
Yep.
And Aaron, it's almost one of those where you go, nah, it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm.
But don't believe it.
I know.
Don't think that it'll... I mean, there's 40, and of course, we're not going through all 40, but some of them, very interesting to me. Writers and authors.
Oh, that's easy to do away with.
James, we just talked about James Patterson.
Yeah.
You're going to replace a James Patterson?
Mm-hmm. That's what they say.
You're going to replace Larry McMurtry? I don't see it. Models. Now, I can see that in print.
We've seen TV news anchors that are AI generated.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Broadcast announcers and radio DJs.
Peace out. Yep. They're coming. They're coming.
We already know there are AI voices that do commercials.
Yep.
I got an email from a company that said, we want you to, you know, we want to buy you out basically. And it was like a $10,000 buyout. There were several pages of copy to read that they could then take. I didn't do it. I should have. Mm-hmm. I'd do it today.
Yeah, right, exactly.
If they would contact me again, I would do it today.
Yeah.
Telemarketers, yeah. So what? Is there a big loss there?
Right.
Sales reps of services.
See, I don't know. That's tough.
Advertising sales agents. Replaced by AI. Personal financial advisors.
Okay, I could see that.
You could see that?
Yeah.
Ticket agents and travel clerks.
Oh, yeah. Definitely see that.
Telephone operators. Are there still telephone operators? Historians.
That makes me sad.
Exactly.
That makes me sad.
Right.
Historians?
Political scientists.
Oh, okay.
No more Dr. Saddos.
Yeah.
Replaced by AI.
Mm. It's funny you mentioned this because yesterday I literally was watching a local TV station.
Okay.
Where one of the local weathermen, who shall remain nameless, they were talking about AI and said, they'll never replace TV weathermen with AI, I thought. And everybody agreed with him. I went, have you not been seeing what's going on?
Right, right.
They have these anchors that are sitting there doing the news. I promise you, they can have a weather guy that does the weather.
Right.
Oh.
And make him look better than you.
Oh, he'll be beautiful.
Right.
He will be beautiful. His tie will be right. His hair will be right. Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
I know. It really is. It's crazy. There's a lot of jobs that could be going away. Now, you still have to have somebody inputting somewhere, like do the weather for Shreveport. Somebody's got to tell the AI what they need. But I'm sure that could be automated, like every day at 6 p.m., do the weather for sure, you know,
they
whatever.
They have a robot that will bring your drinks from the bar to your table. The little, you know. How long is it going to be before we're laughing at that? Remember those?
They have a robot at Patty Shack.
That's what I'm saying.
Brings your burger out. Yeah.
The Mexican restaurant at Piermont Mall. They've got that robot. And bring how long is it going to be before we're laughing at that technology?
Yeah, you got a point.
Mm. It's crazy.
Yep.
We don't need humans anymore. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty still live.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel. Mike M. McCarty. Except they don't sound like that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you. And I mentioned it yesterday. A buddy showed me a website, and I forget what it was called. I have to ask him. But you can take a story and enter it into this website, just any news story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling three minutes later, there's a five-minute podcast.
Golly.
Two people, a man and a woman, are sitting there talking about it.
Unreal.
And he played. We were on the phone. He was on his phone and he played it. And he said, I said, how did they get him to record this? He goes, that's not real people.
Gee whiz.
It was AI voices. A man and a woman going, hey, did you hear about the big wreck that happened out on I-20 yesterday? Yeah, it had traffic tied up for 2 hours. I was in the westbound lane.
They knew all about it.
It was freaky.
And if you're listening and you haven't tried the ChatGPT or one of the AIs, the Gemini or whatever, and put a question in and watch what it comes up with. I mean, it can come up with, find out everything you want to find out about Mike Martindale.
Will it do people?
Yes.
Because I thought, it seems like one time we entered something and it said, I don't do specific, you know, unless it's maybe a Michael Keaton or something like that.
It was doing it yesterday because I was looking for stuff about people and I was finding stuff. Now, it's not
always. You find
always,
stuff on me?
No. Is there a warrant out for you or something we don't know about? Dang.
I don't want to find out if there is.
Let's do Reuben Wright. He's like, no, let's not.
No, he's like, what? He's not listening to us. He's over there doing his thing.
He's working.
My rap sheet is lengthy but very garden variety, so I'm not sure about
nothing,
it.
Nothing big on it. Yeah. Right.
No Jeffrey Epstein on your rap sheet.
No, no. Definitely.
I'll tell you this. I was a Bass Pro Santa for 3 years.
Okay.
So if you think my background isn't clean.
Oh, man, no kidding. Wow. I bet you do have fingerprint and the whole shebang.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh, they run an FBI background check. They did the whole. Oh, absolutely.
Can't have a crazy Santa. Yeah. Well,
no. Let's hope not.
Definitely not.
Mm. Yeah, they take that very seriously.
Big time. Big time. Yeah, definitely.
Louisiana Commissioner of Insurance Tim Temple joining us coming up after the news top of the hour.
And in the 8 o'clock hour, I want you to really join us. If you come back, if you have to go away from the radio, please come back in the 8 o'clock hour. We will be remembering the Shreveport Six. Tomorrow is August 2nd, 15 years ago, one of the most tragic days in our city. Cedric Glover was mayor at the time, and he will be joining us in studio to kind of take us back to that horrific day.
And positive changes have come since.
You bet.
We'll talk about that. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Louisiana Commissioner of Insurance, Tim Temple, joining us. Commissioner, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you for joining us with the, I'll say, new legislature. We've passed several bills. Are you seeing any signs that things are changing in regards to insurance reform?
Well, look, let's set realistic expectations. When laws change, you don't get that instantaneous results when it comes to insurance in a lot of different industries, not just insurance. I mean, this isn't like changing a law like the speeding law where if you're in the left lane, you can get a ticket if you're not passing somebody. I mean, so.
I want lower insurance rates now, though. We passed the laws.
Well,
why isn't it?
Well, we do. Look, everybody.
I'm giving you a hard time. You know that.
No. But it's a good conversation because that's what everybody wants, and a lot of people expect it. And I think that's part of the job of Commissioner of Insurance is to help set reasonable expectations, even when they're not popular. So look, we passed. But I can tell you, last year we passed property laws to help improve the property market, and we are seeing positive impacts now, a year later, with regards to the auto laws that we passed this session. And that was the focus of this session, was really legal reform in respects to the auto industry. You know, it's going to take time. We're trying to make the Louisiana marketplace similar to other states. And look, let me tell you, one of the things that we see is that, and I say this all the time, if we want to enjoy premiums that other neighboring states have, lower premiums on auto, then we have to get our claims level, our claims frequency down to those same levels. And let me tell you, in Louisiana, you've probably seen the articles and the headlines. We have a bodily injury claim ratio number that is twice the national average, and we litigate twice the national average. So if we claim bodily injury and we litigate more, then it's going to cost more. And we're trying to change those conditions to disincentivize people from filing what we refer to as frivolous auto claims. The you know, the bump at a red light, the scrape of a car. We're not talking about major damage and major injuries. We're talking about these little bitty fender benders that we've all heard stories about, or we've all experienced ourselves, where a car gets in a very minor, you can't even classify it as an accident because you don't even trade paint or bend a bumper, but yet they file a claim.
Well, that opens up an entire discussion on tort reform and billboard lawyers. Let me rephrase my original question going back to that. When, Commissioner of Insurance Tim Temple, when do you expect us to see a difference in our rates after these bills, now that they've been passed?
Sure. Well, I'm looking at Florida. Florida passed legislation 2.5-3 years ago, and they are now starting to see very positive trends on their auto.
You said 2.5 years ago?
Down.
2.5 years ago they passed them? Okay.
2.5 years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, like I said, it's going to take time. I wish we could just wave a wand, but it doesn't work that way.
If you were to tell somebody that's listening that, you know, they've got two teenagers at home, they're paying huge high rates, are there some things that they can do to lower the rates? Is now the time to go shop for insurance? Is now the time to, you know, what else can be done on the consumer end?
Well, Aaron, I'd be talking to myself because I've got two teenage daughters,
yep.
One that's just started driving and another's about to start. So, look, it's very prominent on my mind. But look, you should always shop your insurance. I say that no matter whether you're talking about your home or your car, your business, always shop your insurance. Your insurance agents, your direct agents as well as your independent agents, reach out to them and always have them canvass the market, because the market is constantly changing. And a company that you're with today, a year or 2 years from out, may not be as competitive as another company. So look, their business is like everybody else, and they want you to do business with them. And insurance is extremely price sensitive. So if companies want new customers, they know that they have to compete on price. And so, you know, never relax on shopping your insurance. That is one of the fastest ways that you can get premium relief.
And what would you say to people, and we're talking to Insurance Commissioner Tim Temple, what would you say to people who they kind of get married to a company because we've been with them for 30 years?
And I was that way.
Yeah, and I love them, and they pay out good, and they take care of me. And so people are a little bit reluctant to go shop because they don't think the other guys are just as good. That's kind of your job. You make sure they all take care of their customers, right?
Right. Look, we are in charge of consumer protection, making sure that the policies that they have in place, the language there, conform, meet all of the state's, you know, regulations and laws. But I'll tell you this, and this doesn't get me a lot of friends in the insurance industry, but I say shop your insurance and change your carrier every couple of years.
Really?
There is no, look, a lot of people have this sense that if you're with a company for, you know, 10 years and you never file a claim, that you've got some type of higher, you know, loyalty or, you know, status with an insurance company.
They don't care.
They don't. They're a business. They look at you as a 12-month policy. And when that either renews or expires, I mean, it's over. And so there's not this bank that you get. And just like, you know, very few people are loyal to the insurance companies, I mean, we change on pricing. So, you know, shop your insurance. And they're all relatively the same. And look, I encourage people, if you ever have a question, you're looking at an insurance company, you're not quite sure, you haven't heard the name before, call the Department of Insurance. You can talk to a service rep. They will tell you about, they'll tell you, you know, that the company, with their rating and everything that they, you know, as much as information we have about that
idea.
Company. So
mm-hmm.
don't hesitate to call the Department of Insurance.
Will insurance companies do, back in, you know, 10, 15 years ago, cable companies, if you called and said, look, I'm about to cut the cable, they would lower your rate. They'd go, no, we want to keep you. Do insurance companies sometimes do that? If you call your agent and go, look, I'm shopping insurance, I'm going to go to company B if you guys don't come down. Do they do that sometimes?
No, look, if they do, I need to hear about that.
You know, yeah.
But look, both of you, I think you have a good point, though. What does occur, though, is when you bind your policy in the 6 months or 12 months or sometimes, you know, whatever, there are changes that occur within the company. They have different policy forms. They've changed coverage limits. There are things that they do file with the Department of Insurance that change the contract terms. So it is off. I mean, you know, I don't think you're going to benefit by just saying, hey, I'm going to leave mid-policy. But every time you renew, that's why having that insurance agent is so important. They're your number one advocate to make sure that you're getting the best product at the best price.
Well, I was with the largest automobile insurance provider in the state for years, more because of the agent. He was a family friend, and I was there 40 years. Once he passed away and they continued to raise my rates, I shopped and I changed after 40 years.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that is, look, their relationship's built on that. And it's like everybody. I mean, you know, look, you know, you may go to a certain grocery store and buy a product because you like the convenience of that, or you like the people that work there, or you may go to a certain gas station. It doesn't mean you're always going to get the best price because you like some type of, there's some tie to where you're doing business. That certainly applies to the insurance industry as well. But again, in today's environment where premiums are the number one issue that everyone's talking about in our state, whether it's our home, our auto, our business, I think it's vitally important to really, you know, have a conversation with that agent. Say, look, you know, I like doing business with you, but if you can't get me the best pricing that I can afford, then I may have to look somewhere else. And again, that doesn't get me a lot of friends in the industry, but this is about the consumers being able to afford a product that they have to have.
One more thing before we let you go, and this may be unpleasant for you. I don't know. People have probably asked you this. You and the governor got kind of sideways on this topic. There were some bills he was pushing you didn't like, and vice versa. Have y'all come together, sing kumbaya? Are y'all moving forward now and thinking of us as the number one priority?
Well, look, the citizens and voters and insurance consumers of Louisiana are always, that's my number one priority. And again, part of my job, and I think any elected officials, is setting realistic expectations, not setting, I like hope. But a false hope is not good. Part of my job is also to make sure that the department is transparent and that the information about insurance is transparent. So, I didn't get sideways with anybody. I am just doing my job of making sure that when we talk about things that are occurring in the insurance sector, the one that I was elected to oversee, that the information out there is factual.
Gotcha. Tim Temple, Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Listen, I appreciate y'all. And look, we're in hurricane season. It still can impact North Louisiana. Be insurance ready. Go to LDI, connect, to get the app, and find out a lot of good information there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tim. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEO. Coming up, we've got Cedric Glover going to be joining us in studio. The 10th anniversary, is that correct? 15th anniversary of the Shreveport 6 tragedy in Red River. And we'll talk about that. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEO.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
I feel ignorant.
What? Welcome to my world. I feel that way all the time. What?
I missed something. What's going on with American Eagle? It's all over my feeds, and I'm seeing. I literally saw a Tom Arsenault in an American Eagle ad. Tom Arsenault in blue jeans and a blue jean jacket.
What?
With a bow tie. Yeah. On the Caddo parody page. They got a mock-up of Tom Arsenault laying out in his jeans. And I'm like, what have I missed?
Okay, American Eagle's got a commercial now with the hottest girl running. And I say hottest, I mean the hottest property. Okay? She's
the big name.
I never heard of Sydney Sweeney until Dr. Squatch started selling what's called Sydney's Bathwater Bliss.
Who's Dr. Squatch first?
Dr. Squatch is
Squatch,
like a soap and balm company. They
Okay.
Body wash and bath soap and shaving stuff.
Sounds pricey, but go ahead.
They had Sydney Sweeney take a bath.
No, come on.
Literally.
No.
And
you guys buy that stuff?
You guys, do you see me shelling out money for this? It sold out. They took her bath water and infused it with a bath with soap.
So what is she doing for American Eagle?
So now she's on a commercial for American Eagle for jeans, okay? And they're not even tight jeans. Ruben, bring my commercial. Bring my computer up, if you will.
Mm.
And she's talking about jeans passed down traits like hair color and eye color, and good jeans, you know, are important. My jeans are blue, and she's pulling, you know, these. Now they're baggy jeans. They're not skin tight. Okay. Look how sexy
I am. They're not Brooke Shields and her Calvin Kleins. Yeah.
Funny you say that.
The secret of life lies hidden in the genetic code. Genes are fundamental in determining the characteristics of an individual and passing on these characteristics to succeeding generations.
So this is not a new idea.
Certain conditions.
Brooke Shields did the same commercial.
Yeah.
Which will bring about the process of evolution.
She's putting on her jeans.
Very, very tight.
That's what she's doing?
Hers were very, very tight.
Right.
She's laying on the floor pulling these Calvin Klein jeans on.
Okay.
That's basically fast forward 40 years.
So what all the hubbub about it?
Well, now the left has taken this and they've injected race into it. They're saying, well, they're talking about her superior genes are better than other people's genes because she's blonde-haired, blue-eyed, like Hitler wanted for his army. The superior race.
Wow.
Now, if you get that from a jeans commercial, Aaron, you've got more problems than a jeans commercial.
You suck on helium at night or something, man.
So that's what's the consternation is about.
Okay,
the left has taken this.
Stop letting so many little things trouble you. We have so many more important things to trouble you about.
Like bathwater soap.
Oh,
really?
Goodness sakes alive.
Nobody said anything when Beyonce was selling jeans. Sex to sell jeans.
They use
this
sex
is not
to sell
a new concept.
Everything. Blacks, whites, Hispanics, everybody.
Thank
oh,
you.
God, please. Speaking of Hispanics, Chica's coming in. We got to talk to her about something that's troubling me. When I was looking at a lot of the restaurants that we've lost this year, we've closed a lot of restaurants in this town this year, and it's been a problem. I want to talk to her about it.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Best stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, we were talking about the Sydney Sweeney Dr. Squatch soap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it sold out.
Oh, okay.
It sold out.
So she needs to take another bath?
So, yeah. Although, looking up right now, you can buy it on eBay. If you go to eBay, one listing is $220 for a bar of soap. Most of them are around $20. Mm. And it's a picture with her holding the bar, sitting on the edge of the tub, clothed.
Okay.
And a buddy of mine texted when we were talking about that last segment. He says, seriously, bathwater? I said, yeah. He goes, that's gross.
Yeah, that is gross. That really is gross.
I said, well, I thought so.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, who's buying that? I said, apparently a lot of men.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, disgusting.
That is disgusting.
I said, well, I agree. Although, I did buy a comic book. Ruben knows where I'm going.
Mm.
I did buy a comic book infused with the real blood from the members of KISS.
Did you really? Wow.
This was back in the 70s.
Honest to God, I've gone through those comic books. That was the coolest thing about those comic books.
Wow.
They stink.
Okay. Mm.
I don't know what happened to mine. I wish I knew.
I have one.
Because I could probably sell it for, I wonder, let me look and see. But so I said, I'm not going to be, and he said, and I told him, I said, I did buy a comic book. And he goes, yeah, but you didn't rub it all over your body. I said, no, I did not.
Let's hope not anyway.
No,
yeah, definitely.
I did not.
Oh, that's funny. Wow.
So if you want to see, the Sydney Bathwater, what is it called? Bathwater Bliss.
Okay.
Ugh.
Yeah, let me rush out.
You can get it on eBay.
Lovely.
Speaking of Bathwater Bliss.
No.
Chica joining us next. We're going to talk about restaurants. Shreveport is lost. Yeah, Schlotsky's not on the list because it didn't just close.
No, it did not.
This year. So that's coming up after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 KEO, Mike and McCarty.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
I ought to do a story on restaurants Shreveport-Bossier would like to see come here.
Yeah, there's a few.
Spoiler alert, did it.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry. P.F. Chang's is like a huge one. Mm-hmm. People want Culver's. People really want Chewy's here in town.
Chewy's is good.
You like Chewy's?
Yeah. He wants Schlotsky's.
Schlotsky's.
Okay, why does that keep coming up? In between this guy, gosh, our friend Joy is obsessed with it. Yeah. Our buddy, Ryan Best down the hall. He finds any excuse. I think there's one
Marshall.
In Marshall.
There's one. The nearest one is in Marshall.
I want Grandy's back. I think there's one in Texarkana.
Wait, Grandy's was...
By the way, there is a Schlotsky's in Kilgore.
Yes.
Ooh, cool.
There's a Grandy's in... I don't know
Texarkana.
If it's shut down. There's supposed to be one in Longview.
Okay.
I got to look that up, although I've never been to one.
But is the 2025 Grandy's the Grandy's you remember?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Golden Corral
I'm working on something I need your help with. We got diverted. Restaurants that have closed this year. We've had a bunch.
Yeah.
We've had Hooters. We've had RJ. I could go through Joe's Crab Shack. A bunch.
Yeah.
My question to you is, I was doing a little research on this article I'm working on. It's been a tough few years in the restaurant business.
Absolutely.
And what seems to be happening, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, what seems to be happening is that as inflation hit the restaurants and they're paying more for eggs and meat and all the stuff, they've had to raise their prices.
Correct.
While at the same time that's going on, they've also had to pay higher wages.
Correct.
Because workers are getting more money at different places, and so they've got hit with a double whammy, a board on one side of the head, a board on the other side of the head. And then what's happening now is if I'm a diner and I'm going out to eat, instead of you being able to charge me $15 for my meal, you're now having to charge me $25 or $30. Mm-hmm. So I'm paying more. Mm-hmm. So now I'm more demanding. And I'm not coming as often because it's more expensive.
Oh, yeah. You're spelling it out.
How do they get beyond this? I mean, it's like they're in quicksand.
Well, and I remember, growing up, I used to hear my brothers all the time, and now they're saying it has to be sooner than that. But the thought was, if your restaurant can survive for 3 years, you're going to be okay.
Okay.
Right? But how are we seeing these restaurants that have been around? Now, keep in mind, if you go through the list, you're going to see a lot of restaurants that didn't last long.
Right.
But you're also going to see, RJ's was around for,
yes. 30 years.
Joe's Crab Shack.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. You're going to see all these different places.
Hooters
that
was
have
on
been,
the boardwalk for a
oh
long
my
time.
Gosh, over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And so it's just...
Hooters has been struggling nationwide.
They have.
This
they
is
have.
Not
same
just
with,
a boardwalk
same with,
issue.
Same with Joe's Crab Shack.
Yes.
Okay. So there are, but you got to understand, look at what Red Lobster had to do. Like, that's a perfect example. Red Lobster had to go and hire one of the youngest CEOs. I don't even think he's 30. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
This kid that they hired. And I say kid because I'm like a couple of years older than him.
Yeah.
And he had to completely revamp and restructure and reshape. The restaurant business is changing dramatically.
So what do they have to do to survive? Do they have to have lower prices on some items to keep people coming out? Do they have... I don't know.
I'm going to say something that somebody's going to say, oh, you're putting money in your pocket about this. Okay, the best way I could describe it is I'm seeing a huge issue of restaurants aren't, and my brothers did this with one of their restaurants, and their restaurant almost failed.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to put them on blast, but how are you going to start a business with no marketing? That, and I'm saying this for even a new one. You're starting a business and there is no marketing budget at all. And we're seeing this more and more and more, right?
Yeah.
So these older restaurants that are like, hey, we've been around for forever. We don't have to add, like, we don't have to market. And marketing looks very different. And I'm not by any means saying, you need to come on here and do a radio commercial. Otherwise, you will be empty. No, no, no.
It is a lot different now.
Yeah.
Very different.
So these restaurants now that are thinking, oh, like word of mouth, baby, word of mouth isn't it like... Once I, when I say the landscape has dramatically changed, yeah. So you got these people that are like, okay, well, I got $1,500 and we're 3 months away from the restaurant closing down. And you're looking at them like, baby, like that's not going to help you.
No,
a buddy just texted me and said, everybody's clamoring for a livable wage. Well, what kind of livable wage are you getting at Joe's Crab Shack now?
Yeah, they're all gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's rough. Looking at the restaurant world, right? You need bodies in the restaurants. And then once you get bodies in the restaurants, what happened? Like, for example, I went to a restaurant two nights in a row recently. Mm-hmm. And this restaurant's not, God bless them. But they had one server.
Mm-hmm.
Right. One server for the whole area.
Wow.
They had a bartender that was serving our area and they had one server. And that's all they, because the server said, well, if two servers show up, we go home with $15. But if one of us shows up, wow. He goes, we end up with this weird like, oh, dang, like I made $200 tonight.
Yeah.
But they ran me ragged.
Our last 30 seconds. Do you think we will ever see prices come back down at restaurants? Or do you think we're at these prices now and that's where it's going to stay?
Oh, it's not going to go back down.
I think that the restaurant landscape has forever changed. I think that it is going to be just like it was back in the day, to where when you go out to eat, it is a special occasion.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think we're getting to that point because we got to a point where we were going out to eat every night, right?
Peanut butter and jelly for me. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Thanks, Chica.
Former Mayor Cedric Glover going to join us after the news top of the hour for the 15th anniversary coming up this Sunday for the Shreveport 6 tragedy in Red River and the good that has come out of that tragedy.
You bet.
101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Follow up on a couple things, talking about the Sydney Sweeney bathwater bliss soap that you can buy or could that sold out. They had Dr. Squatch had her take a bath and then infused her bathwater into soap. And one of our messages on the Shreveport Security Systems message board, on the topic of this bathwater soap thing, I guess P.T. Barnum was right. A sucker is born every minute.
Yeah. Boy, no kidding.
Absolutely.
Man. Wow.
Last segment, we were talking about restaurants that have closed. Brian in Bossier said, Poncho's.
True.
We lost Poncho, but that was a few years ago.
It's been a while. That's been a while ago. Yeah, I'm just working on the ones for this year, and I've got about seven or so. It's not been a good year, and we're just over halfway done. So, and some of them are legendary, longtime restaurants. So, they got a tough battle ahead. Because I know if I don't eat out as much, and I have the money to eat out, if I want to eat out, I can. I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the prices, I'm like, I'll stay home. I got turkey.
Well, even just going out for lunch. I don't go out for lunch every day anymore.
Right.
Anymore. I go home a lot now.
Mm-hmm.
Subway, you're looking at $20 just for a Subway sandwich.
I went to lunch with a friend the other day and I said, I'll get the check. You get it next time. It was $60.
Yeah.
Now we had appetizer and all that, but I'm like, $60 for lunch for two people?
Two bottles of wine.
And no alcohol, believe it or not. And I just had water. I mean, I'm a penny pincher, so I get water. Just serve me water. Some people are charging for water now. Are restaurants going to start charging for water? Yeah.
Come on.
It's coming.
Now, if you get a bottle of water, okay, I can see that.
Water's going to cost you soon. They got to serve you ice. They got to have a straw. They're going to soon start charging for everything. Mark my words.
Well, look at the airline industry.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Who'd have thought they'd charge you for your luggage?
And then they weigh it in. Why does mine always weigh more? I feel like I got on the scale.
I'm not answering
Give my luggage some GLP medicine.
I'm not answering that question. Are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
Coming up, Cedric Glover, August 2nd, which is tomorrow, by the way.
You
tomorrow
bet.
Is the 15th anniversary. The tragic loss in Red River, the Shreveport six teenagers drowned.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some good things that happened since then. Cedric Glover was the mayor at the time.
Absolutely.
He's going to join us coming up right after the news, top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710 KEO, Mike and McCarty. What a 107 FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty studio. I'm sorry?
I just said, oh boy, this is tough to talk about.
Yes. Former Shreveport Mayor Cedric Glover, now Director of Downtown Development Authority. Thanks for coming out this morning.
Thank you all for having me.
15th anniversary of a tragic event in the Red River in Shreveport, six teenagers. And Aaron, what makes this even more tragic is the fact that some of those that drowned were trying to save others.
Right.
Even though none of them knew how to swim. Mm-hmm. It's just heartbreaking. Mayor Glover is in studio. Cedric, how did you first get notification of this when it happened?
Well, I was driving down Kings Highway. I was in front of Centenary College about to go to a meeting and got a phone call from former Shreveport Fire Chief Brian Crawford, and the message was very direct, very succinct. He said, "The mayor, we have six in the water in the Red River at Charles and Marie Hamels Park, and it's quickly transitioning from a rescue to a recovery." I turned off my blinker when I was about to turn and told him I was on my way.
Mm. They were waiting on the banks and along a sandbar. They were just
enjoying
the afternoon.
The family had gone down for a day on a sandbar, an area that looks very much like a beach that you would see at Cypress Park or Kettle Lake Park or anywhere else. But unfortunately, instead of that sand transitioning into a steel body of water like a lake or a pond, it transitions into a very fast-moving river,
right,
with lots of currents and eddies and what have you that can quickly challenge even the experienced swimmer, and is certainly an inappropriate place for people who cannot swim.
What is, and I get goosebumps when you tell the story, but the family was there. It was the Warner and the Stewart families. The mom is there.
Well, Maude Warner, one of the mothers.
One of the mothers was there.
One of the other mothers was at work.
And she doesn't swim either at
Correct.
That time.
None of them could swim.
They did have one life jacket that they were able to toss to that initial child, I believe, right?
No, actually, the child was saved by a person.
Okay.
An individual who we recognized and honored, in fact, at the city council not long after that, who came upon the situation. I think they may have been out fishing or what have you.
Okay.
And the six of them had gone into the water trying to save one individual. The person came and saved that one child and pulled him out, but was not able to, unfortunately, retrieve the other.
So there was no life jacket. I saw a report that there had been one life jacket, and there was not.
Not to my recollection.
Cedric, how did this change your life? You're mayor of this town. You have six teenagers who have just died. You're dealing with the moms, the families, the trauma. I can't even imagine.
Well, I'm too young to have remembered when JFK was assassinated or Dr. King. I remember being very young with the moon landing, but that was not But this is a day that's right up there for me and my generation as a Gen Xer, I guess with 9/11. It's one of those things where you always know where you were when you got the news and what happened.
When I asked you the first question, when you went into such detail, I thought that exact thing. This is one of those things you will never forget. You remember exactly where you were.
I remember exactly where I was.
Yes.
Exactly the words that were shared with me. And in vivid detail, unfortunately, all those things that followed.
Now, when you get to the scene, describe the scene. What's going on?
Oh, it's chaos, obviously. You know, you have Chief Crawford and other first responders who are there, you know, attempting to do the initial rescues, coming to the conclusion that there's going to be a retrieval. Obviously, the family members who were there on scene are just simply overwhelmed with grief. The heat was oppressive. That was the other thing. That stood out. It became quickly clear that we're going to be here for a while, and we need to get these folks into some place where there can be some level of comfort. And so the next thing that occurred to me was to reach out to Gene Eddy, who at that time was over Sportran. We need something here large enough to make these folks comfortable, and that was a city bus.
Mm-hmm.
And so called and had a bus dispatched so we could get them into a place where they could sit, have some comfort, and get ready for what we all understood was about to be a long wait.
And there are boats, I assume, in the water, rescue boats trying to find the children, right?
They're getting all that set up and marshaled up and what have you. Those things are being staged and put in place and actively advanced. And you have the mantra from the mother on site and family members, please, you know, get my child, get my brother, get my sister, et cetera, out of the water. Please don't leave them there. And at that point, there was a consultation with Chief Crawford and the others on site of, you know, what can I tell them? And to their credit, they said, Mayor, we're not going to leave here until we have all six of them.
Mm.
And I asked, is that something I can tell them and stand on? And they said, yes. And so that's what I went and said to Maude and the rest of the family. And then soon thereafter, as Renee Blaylock showed up, is that the one thing that I promise is that we are not going to leave here tonight until we have gotten all of your children out of the water. You know, part of what began to compound that is that by then the sun is starting
it's
to
darkness,
set.
Yeah.
And so with the impending darkness, knowing that your child is gone, and the idea that you don't want them out there in that water.
Did they find them that night?
Yes.
They did?
Yes, they did. That promise was made. That promise was kept. And part of what made it such a significant imprint on me personally is that, I guess as I had a tendency to do, at that time, once it was established that we were going to absolutely manage to be able to try and do that night.
Mm-hmm.
We had the bus on site to get them in and out of the heat. By then, you have, you know, pastors who are responding, folks from the Kettle school system with counselors and what have you, other family members are responding. And then I went back down, I guess as I figured a mayor should do, to stand vigil over the work that the first responders and the dive team were engaged in. And literally saw them retrieve the bodies from the water.
Mm. Are you crying, Cedric, during this?
No.
You weren't. You were we were trying to hold it back and be strong for
absolutely
the families.
Absolutely.
How hard was that to do?
Well, I mean, at that point, you're in business mode. You're in mayoral mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're here to be the representation.
But you get home, you broke down, didn't you?
It probably took a while. And what finally caused it and what continues to cause it to this day is as the bodies were pulled from the water and laid there along the bank as they went back in to search for the others. And the first, to my recollection, that was retrieved was Takitha Warner. She was the only girl, 13 years old, and as she laid there on the bank of the Red River, she simply looked as if she was asleep. Mm. Just taking a nap in the evening, setting sun, and each of the rest of them as they were retrieved and set aside there. it looked as if they were just simply sleeping. And to realize that they were not asleep, that they had passed, and that this was going to be a compounding situation as one body was added to the next. Those are sights, those are scenes that I'll never forget. But I was there to let the folks who were doing that very hard, difficult work to know that what they were doing was appreciated, respected, and that it meant something to the folks who were back up there on the shore in that bus, and that it would be at least the beginning of how it is that we managed to be able to figure out how we go forward in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty. We're going to take a break. This is just heartbreaking. Yeah. As a father, this is just, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. But Cedric, some good has come out of this tragic situation.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about that when we get back. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Former Shreveport Mayor Cedric Glover, people still call you Mayor.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
Mayor Cedric Glover in studio. Tomorrow's the 15th anniversary of the tragic situation on Red River. Six teenagers. One began to drown, and then five others went in that didn't know how to swim.
Six
total, but I'm saying, other...
The first one survived.
First one survived.
The initial one survived.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
So six more came in after him.
Six more. Yeah. Wow. Mm. So we said, God can take a bad situation and bring some good out of it. And that's what's happened here. Mm-hmm. And explain what you and Shelley have done in the years since and have made a huge difference in the lives of thousands of children in Shreveporters now.
Absolutely. Well, in the midst of a situation like that, you try and figure out what could come out of this that, one, first and foremost, prevents it from happening again.
Right.
That's the how we can't bring these six children back, but let's see how we stop these sorts of things from happening again. And there were some folks who said, we need no swimming signs along the river, and at that point, we need to put them up everywhere then in that regard. But more specifically, we came to the understanding, and it was a combination of folks, myself, Chief Crawford, Shelley Regal, and Shelley McMillan, collectively came up with the idea, it would be great, and lots of other folks as well, that it would be great to be able to use this as a clarion call to help other children learn how to swim or at least be safe around water. And from that came the concept of Project Swim. Now, part of what I guess is fortuitous about all of this is that, and it may have been part of some larger divine plan, is that if you go back to towards the end of my first term as mayor, is when the Great Recession hit and revenues began to get low and, cities like Bossier and others had significant layoffs. We managed to avoid the layoffs in Shreveport. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we did do was say, we're going to not open our pools this summer, and we're going to save that money. Well, in conjunction with that, Coach Johnny Booty called me and said, and this is the year before, this is 09,
okay,
that I'm working with a youth group with Shelley McMillan, Rock Solid, and they need access to a swimming pool. And I said, well, Coach, we're not going to be running our pools this summer. So we've got a pool that they can use. That led to us at that point going, well, maybe between Rock Solid, maybe the Y and some others, we may be able to outsource the operation and management of our pool system. To Shelley McMillan's and Rock Solid's credit, they stepped forward and said, we will run and operate however many pools you want us to manage and operate. So starting in 09 is when we outsourced the management and operation of the city's pools. So by the time we get to 2010, Shelley is a year into that, and so she's a part of this dialogue about what mm-hmm. we can do going forward. And so the idea of Project Swim came forward. The folks at the Community Foundation stepped forward with the Grayson Fund to provide some matching funding. And we had an outpouring of donations and support from across the city and across the nation, and some came from other parts of the world that said that we will teach at-risk children basic introductory water safety, basic water safety and introductory swimming for free. And that's where the concept of Project Swim came forward. We launched it for the first year in 2011. Had a great year that year, taught several thousand children that summer. Had some funding for 2012. Then about that time, the funding was starting to run out because obviously as time passes, things become, you know, less urgent, less mindful, less top of mind for people. And it just so happened about that time is when the late Judah Hertz, who I'd met earlier, a few years earlier, when he would come to town, we would always schedule and have dinner. Judah came to town about that second year and asked, how is that swim program that you guys started going? And I said, well, had a great first year, pretty well this year, but I'm not sure if we're going to be able to keep it going. But certainly would love to do so. And he said, let me say something to you about my faith. He said, my faith teaches that a father has three obligations to his children. He said his first obligation is to teach them how to read so that they have the ability to be able to read Holy Scripture and understand what it is that the Lord has for us to do in our lives.
I like that.
He said, number two, the second thing that a father owes his child is to teach them how to make an honest living. He said, because if you fail to do that, then you commit them to the illicit, because they will do whatever is necessary in order to be able to survive. He said, the third thing that a father owes his child is to teach them how to swim. He said, because life itself comes from water. We need water to live. We live in and around it. We pull our food, our sustenance, and our support from water. And so you have to teach your child how to swim. Otherwise, they risk being lost to the water itself. He said, so with that understanding, what I want you to do is to teach all who are willing. Again, words that you will always remember. Say, teach all who are willing and send me the bill. And that's what we did.
And that's still going on today.
No, unfortunately. Judah passed away in 2021.
Okay.
But at his passing, he had expended well over $700,000.
Wow.
Project Swim. And by that time, we were probably somewhere into the teens in terms of total numbers. He passed away in 2021. His children carried on a portion of that support. Unfortunately, by the time the pandemic hit and the real estate markets began to tumble, they obviously ran into trouble that has been documented since his passing. And then in my last year in the legislature, had an opportunity to be able to use the wherewithal of being in the House to leverage some resources from the state, and thought about what would be my highest priority, recognizing that this may be very well my last go-round as an elected official. And so I decided to have the state of Louisiana to match the approximate amount of money that Judah had contributed to Project Swim.
Wow.
And so the state of Louisiana directed $700,000 to the city of Shreveport to support Project Swim.
Can you stay with us for another segment? Because I want to talk about how many kids we've impacted.
Yes.
Because it's Project Swim and another program for second graders that's real critical in town.
Mayor Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty. We'll be back after the news. 101.7 FM, 710Keel.com.
Back with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Former Shreveport Mayor Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty, on the 15th anniversary tomorrow, August 2nd, 2010, of the tragic drowning six teenagers in the Red River. But a lot of good has come out of that. Project Swim, thousands of children have had free swim lessons in water safety. But we were talking during the news, Cedric, this is this is disturbing. The program is not currently active. Is it?
Well, you know, the funding is not there as it has been in previous years. Judah Hertz passed away. The $700,000 that the state of Louisiana contributed was used for both a combination of swimming lessons and some improvements at the city's swimming pool infrastructure, which was an appropriate use for it as well. And obviously, I'm no longer
in the legislature.
And what have you. And so, you know, this is something that is very personal to me. And so I can't expect that there are others who would share the same level of commitment and concern that I have, because they didn't go through the same set of experiences I did in terms of these circumstances. So, but we're thankful that over 22,000 have been impacted and benefited so far. We're constantly brainstorming about ways in which to potentially try and carry this forward. In fact, one of which would be potentially a campaign that would tell folks that if you want to continue to see Project Swim go forward, you know, here's what Rock Solid charges
yes.
for those five lessons of water safety and introductory swim.
I mean, could something as simple as a GoFundMe work?
Well, you know, we're actually trying to come up with something a little bit more structured than that.
Okay,
that would obviously
have. Let me know, please.
And we will do just
whatever.
That.
Yes,
and hopefully we may have something for the next Give for Good that folks can manage and be able to identify and say, here's what we want to support.
We also have to talk about what's happening, because I see these youngsters at the Y. It's not swim lessons per se, but every second grader in Caddo schools is getting a water safety course, like things you need to know if you're around water. Mm-hmm. That's reached 20,000 plus children too, right?
Absolutely. In fact, just yesterday I had lunch with school board president Jasmine Green. And the YMCA's Jeffrey Goodman to help them connect the dots, because they talk about what inspired the program. They don't necessarily tell the story of what led to the program in terms of the sacrifices of these six children, all of whom at the time were Kettle Parish students.
Right.
And so, yes, one of the great things that has come about as a result of this tragedy is between the partnership of the YMCA and the Kettle Parish school system is that every second grader, up to now, I think, effective this year, that number is at 21,000 second graders here in Caddo Parish go through that week-long experience of getting them introduced to the concepts of water safety, swimming fundamentals, and what have you, so that at least at that point you begin to inoculate a climate and a culture and a community of swimmers. The benefit of that is that while they may not leave that being fully competent at swimming, at least they know kind of like stop, drop, and roll and the other things that children have learned over the years that they know that when they find either themselves or someone that they're around in danger, they know how to better respond.
Right.
I may not have $700,000, but there I can help. And I would like to. So keep us posted.
Please, absolutely.
On that progress.
And let me ask you a question, too, because, you know, there have been a lot of people have discussed a lot of these children, these teenagers, the Warner and the Stewart family. These folks in a lot of our neighborhoods, in our poorer communities, they don't have access to swimming pools. It's not part of their life. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure those are the kids we're reaching, because you'd never know. They might go to Johnny's house, and guess what? Johnny's got a pool.
Absolutely.
And they need to know how to deal with it. Absolutely. That's a big problem, right?
It has been a long-standing problem of, one, limited access, then other cultural issues. In fact, one of the things that's often kept young black girls from swimming is the difference in terms of what swimming does to your hair.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't keep my hair dry and don't want to end up coming out, as I've heard Mike mention, having a daughter who's a swimmer. You know, you come to school every morning, you know the kids in school who were in the swimmers because their hair was always wet.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of issues and challenges over the years that have accounted for why there are significant populations within this within our city and across the country who never end up actually becoming swimmers or getting comfortable just being how to be safe in water.
We've got to take a quick break. I want to ask you a little bit about your contact with the families over all these years, because I know you stay in touch, and we're going to talk to him about that.
Mayor Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Former Mayor Cedric Glover in studio, Mike and McCarty. Tomorrow, the 15th anniversary of the tragic Shreveport 6 drowning. Mayor, we were just talking during the break. Out of the family members that were present on that horrible day, you said they have now embraced learning how to swim because nobody on that day knew how to swim.
Absolutely. Both mothers have embraced the Project Swim, and both themselves came out and learned how to swim. Maude Warner at Airport Park and brought her surviving children and other family members, and Renee Blaylock and her husband and surviving children and other family members, they learned how to swim at Southern Hills and encouraged others over the years. And so, yes, that's one of the positive outcomes out of this is that we're trying to help spread that there is a need to help to acclimate children to water at an early age, to help adults who've never gotten comfortable in water to overcome that fear and that it is possible. And that from that can come the ability to not only save yourself, but be able to hopefully potentially save others as well.
So what are you doing tomorrow? It's the day. Tomorrow's the 15th anniversary. Anniversary is just not the right word. What is happening tomorrow to remember these families and these teens?
Well, thanks to the city of Shreveport, Mayor Arsenault and Shelley Regal and Shelley McMillan. We're going to be gathering for a family-only event that will be taking place at the Southern Hills Pool. If you can remember from the fifth anniversary 10 years ago, Judah Hertz, God bless him, bought out the old Splash Kingdom. And we had a huge community-wide celebration. We don't have resources to do that this year, so we're doing something a bit more scaled down. But at the end of that effort from 10 years ago, we ended it with the launching of six Skylanders, one dedicated to each of the six children, and then a seventh Unity Skylander that was released between the two mothers. We came back 5 years ago in the midst of the pandemic, and we had that same Skylander ceremony there at the actual site at Charles and Marie Hamels Park. So we'll come out tomorrow night. The families will gather, do a little swimming, listen to music from
Cedric Glover's getting in the pool.
No, Cedric Glover will be just coming from his nephew's wedding.
Okay,
I'll be sweating.
Okay,
we will have food.
Know how to swim.
Yes, I do.
Okay,
The late Coach Carl Pearson taught me and probably hundreds of others coming up how to swim. Okay. It took me 6 weeks to finally get it down, but. Yes, I left a competent swimmer and continued to be so over the years and need to find my way back into the water a little bit more often so I may come out and splash the water out of somebody's pool.
You brought up an interesting point during the break that Aaron said, you know, relatively speaking, it's easy to teach children, but adults have this fear that they've had for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's more difficult to teach adults, but The Y does a great job with one of the instructors there.
They have some folks there that deal just with adults, and they know how to get... And there are a lot of... Shelley's program as well. They they know how to address it when adults are scared to death.
Well, I mean, the fear of drowning is one of the strongest fears that people have, period, because just about everyone, whether you can swim or not, has had some bad experience in the water. Mm-hmm. Where you felt that feeling of that water coming down your throat and you're not being able to breathe and that sense of panic.
Mm-hmm. Mike Johnson just told the story of his sons that got caught in a riptide on the beach. Right. They can both swim, but they were out of sight.
Right.
Yes.
And it can happen like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so that sense and level of fear for most folks is what accounts for why they continue to stay averse and avoid encountering the water. And so, but it's important to be able to overcome that and at the very least be able to do those things that are necessary to save yourself and others. Now, you may ever never become a strong swimmer, but at least knowing how to properly react when somebody else is endangered and then how for yourself to be able to do a survival float and
right.
all of those other things that can give you that additional time mm-hmm. for someone to be able to come in potentially.
Cedric Glover, we're out of time, but I nobody sits you down when you're elected mayor and says, here's the crises you're going to have during your mayoral term. Here's the you get no instruction manual for something like this.
You do not.
Fly by the seat of your pants is kind of what you do.
Right.
Would you grade yourself? I think you did an amazing job handling one of our city's biggest tragedies.
Well, thank you. But here's the one thing that I heard Chief, now Sheriff Whitehorn, say early on, and that is, if you're walking through the woods and you come across a turtle sitting on top of a fence post, the one thing that you can be assured of is that it didn't get there by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I may have been the point of focus at that time, it was the overwhelming effort of a whole lot of people, starting with those first responders and then the community in general. Helen Godfrey Smith, who came forward and raised the money for all of the funerals, and all of the other pastors and counselors that came out to support and wrapped arms around the families, the folks at the schools that, you know, helped to provide the support and counseling for the children, and the people who contributed the money mm-hmm. to the community foundation and what have you to help start Project Swim. And so, you know, I guess I was the face of the effort. I probably saw more of it than most people saw. In terms of everything that was happening that mm-hmm. day, to the things behind the scenes and what have you. But thank you for that.
You bet.
But most importantly, thank you for all of those folks out there who prayed, who contributed, who supported, and who lifted us all up and helped to give some purpose to some overwhelming pain and ultimately end up doing some good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to reiterate, we talked about Project Swim is in flux right now.
Yes, we want to help.
You're working yeah. on even something better than a GoFundMe. Keep us, please keep us posted, we'll because mm-hmm. I definitely want to help. You're going to see the families. I know it's a family event only tomorrow.
Yes.
Please give those mothers a hug from me. Mm-hmm. And I mean that sincerely.
And we're praying for them, definitely.
Yeah, and thank them for all that they've done.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thank you, Aaron, and thank you to this community mm-hmm. for not forgetting these children, for helping to bring some good from that tragic loss mm-hmm. And giving these mothers something to be able to hold on to know that, you know, as they face that daily loss of having lost three children all at one time, that they can continue to see some good that's come from it
yes.
and know that mm-hmm. it was not just simply all in vain.
Thank you, Mayor.
Cedric. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You so much. Thank you. 1017 FM, 710 Keel.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What an hour.
And yeah, and if you don't know, I mean, I have taught swim lessons.
Yes.
I taught swim lessons for probably 10, 12 years in my younger days. Recently, I started teaching as kind of a sub. If somebody couldn't make it, I would be teaching. And the same old skill comes up. You can still help teach little kids. I mean, I haven't done it in a while now, in the year or two, but they have great folks that do that. But we need to make sure that program continues, Mike. We need to do whatever we can do to make sure.
Wholeheartedly in.
It's a big deal to make sure both my children have been swimming since they were little. Obviously, yours too.
Mine. Swimming, I was just telling you during the break, swimming is very close to my heart,
mm-hmm.
obviously. Both my kids know how to swim. My yeah. daughter went to the Olympic time trials
right,
for crying
exactly.
out loud with swimming. So it's not something I want to say I took for granted,
mm-hmm.
but maybe I did.
Yeah. And I got a text as we wrap up the show today from someone. He's going to remain nameless. And I'm praying for you today and your family. And I'm going to quote, "As a father who has tragically lost a child,
oh.
I can tell you that it is a pain that never goes away. I cannot even imagine the loss that mother is feeling. Faith is truly what brings you through." And that, I mean, we have never lost a child, but there are people who have done it and gone through it. you can never fully be over it.
And
you
I can't imagine and don't want to try. But as a father, my thoughts and prayers are with you.
For the Warner and the Stewart families, we are praying for you. We will be thinking about you throughout this entire weekend. I know this is a real traumatic day.
And we want the good that's come out of that to continue.
You
and
bet.
We will follow up on
Absolutely.
That. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.